Hello everyone, welcome to People's Internet Radio and We Roar and everyone else who's making a lot of noise out there. Tonight we have Father Bob McGuire, who's resident priest and knower of all things spiritual and material. Is that right, Father Bob McGuire?
Yes, that's right. And I was introduced the other night on the wireless as having been a priest for half a century. That struck me for the first time, you know, that it's almost good night and good luck.
Oh, it's a long time. They said good night.
Half a century. God almighty. Why couldn't he have said just, you know, a long-serving priest or something?
We just have to measure everything. And look, tonight we're going to be talking about homelessness, Bob, and if there's anybody who I know who's got down and got dirty with the homeless, it's you. You've given the homeless many a home. We've got Dr. Heather Holst, who's actually started the first non-for-profit real estate agency in Melbourne. I don't know if it's in the world. I'm just absolutely gobsmacked. Do you want to try and grab her, Stephen?
Yes, I can.
Heather's worked in the housing, homeless and tenancy sector since 1989 as a frontline worker. She's a senior manager, network coordinator, board member, public service officer. She's undertaken research into housing and homelessness, including a PhD thesis on the historical aspects of homelessness in Victoria, Australia. So she's a doctor of homelessness, which is a pretty weird thing and wonderful thing to be. So she really knows her stuff. And so she's gone and found some real estate agents, and she started this amazing thing called Home Ground, which is a non-for-profit real estate agent. Have you heard about it, Bob?
Yeah, of course. We've even been the beneficiaries from their work.
Have you?
There she is. I can see her there on the television.
Hello, Heather.
I can see Heather.
She's not on yet.
Oh. I can see a thing, a shimmering thing that looks like Heather.
And the angel of the Lord came down. Hello, Heather. This is Jill Triplepocket.
Hi, Jill.
Yeah, hi. And Father Bob McGuire's here. He'd like to say hello to you.
Hello. Hello, Heather.
G'day, Bob. Hi, how are you?
Thank you. But Bob, she knows everything. See, she knows things, whereas I've only been anecdotally involved at the sad end of homelessness, whereas Heather, you see, knows and is doing something positive about it.
Oh, yeah, we're being a bit too modest there, though, I think.
Oh, no, anyway. I don't think so. Because we go back to the old days, Heather. I was talking to an old bloke yesterday in town about the days of, what was it called, Dudley Flat in Melbourne.
Oh, yeah, down in South Melbourne there, yeah.
Now, along Footscray Road, towards Footscray, where it was taken for granted that homeless people could go there when that was the end of the line for them, and they put up their own little corrugated iron humpies, and that went on for, I don't know how long, 10, 20, 30, 40 years maybe.
Yeah. I remember seeing photos of that, old Oswald Barnett, who campaigned for public housing, that was one of the things he showed a lot of photos of. Yeah.
So we might be ending up back there. Apart from your magnificent program, there'll still be people, I presume, who either won't or can't or shouldn't go into places with four walls and windows and doors and things.
Yeah, well, that's the worry, isn't it? I mean, as you know, Home Ground, Bob, are we still there?
Yep.
Bob says actually been a beneficiary of Home Ground.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's good. Good news. Well, we do see a lot of people a year, Bob. What happened there?
Oh, no. Only with my foundation patrols the streets with Big Umbrella, who seem to be mixed up with, Melbourne City Mission. And I think, as usual, if we can't find a place for a person who's sleeping in a doorway or something, well, then you get in touch with Home Ground.
That's what you do.
And then
either
find a decent place for them, or else you find that your client, so to speak, is beyond all that or above all that and has to get special treatment somewhere else. But anyway, thank God for Home Ground.
Well, the reason we're doing this, having a go at the private real estate agency, is because we just can't find enough houses for all the people we're seeing. That's what we're up to. You know, because we get as much access as we can to public housing, what little bit of it there is, and, you know, community housing as well. But we've just got so many people waging, you know, in terrible situations.
Yes.
And it's just not okay. Yeah. So we've got to give the private rental market as good a go as we can, because that's where more of the houses are. But, you know, too many people just get locked out of that. They can't get in access-wise. So I think we might be able to help with that.
Yes. Just around the corner from me, we've got a place that looks as though it's got 31 tenants. It's a foundation called George Vowell Foundation.
Oh, now we're talking to them. Yes, I know what you mean. Yeah,
We need a partner there because our local community housing people, Southport Community Housing, would dearly love to retain those 31 units with 31 elderly locals, most of whom have been there for years. But George Vowell seems to be in the position where they have to sell the wretched thing. We've asked the government, give us a couple of million dollars, because we've got a couple of million dollars ourselves. And if you keep those people there, you see, so...
That's it, exactly. Well, Southport would be the perfect one to manage all that too. They're experts at that stuff.
They're beautiful. They're beautiful.
Job.
Janet Goodwin and her team, magnificent.
Absolutely, yeah.
And they teamed up with the parish of South Melbourne when I was there until I was extradited. We managed to get 42 units built on parish property for community housing, and Southport manages it. And... Yeah, that you see, they're the kind of things you can do, as you know better than I do. But, you've still got to have goodwill from partners, and trying to get the Roman Catholic Church to agree to that thing was hell. I don't know whether it would play the part and get me thrown out, but, I mean, we were determined that public housing had to be part of the parish real estate to show what we were really on about.
Yeah. And you see, things like the private real estate agency can't help with that sort of stuff. I mean, that's just pure, you've got to put some cash down. Sometimes you just got to put some cash down. That's all there is to it. We went, I'm not sure if you saw the housing framework got launched yesterday, the Victorian government, housing framework that we'd all been waiting for about what they're going to do with social housing. But there's just no new money. Apart from a little bit extra in maintenance, there's just no new money. So, you know, it's really frustrating.
Well, this is the thing. How do you get the community engaged? This is one of your big issues, isn't it, Heather? Trying to get some community engagement and get the people to take responsibility for this and not leave the responsibility to the government.
Well, I suppose it's a bit of both. I mean, I think people need to take responsibility, but they also need to say to their government, to their member of parliament, look, you know, you're there because of my vote. What I want my vote to do is also care about affordable housing. The trouble in Australia is that some of us are very well housed and some of us aren't. And, you know, there seems to be just a really big divide about it. And for some reason, those of us who are well housed too often can't kind of seem to see that that's a big issue because it isn't a personal issue for us right at the moment. So for some reason, I'm not sure why, but it's really fallen off the political agenda. It used to be there years ago, and that's where we need to get it again, I think.
Yeah, well, I was reading some of the things that you were saying, you have to approach everything from many sides. I keep saying this again and again and again, but there's not one way to look after homelessness, is there? There's not one way to do anything, really.
There's just not one standard type of homeless person, is exactly right. So, you know, we see about 10,000 households a year at HomeGuard. So that's kind of inner Melbourne, I suppose, if you're lucky, in the suburbs around the north and south and the CBD there. And, you know, no one person's the same as the next one. And people need a range of options when they're in strife, you know, depending what their background is and what their need is now. So that's what we're trying to do all the time, broaden that range and just make it faster for people to get into that long-term situation where they can just start to put the pieces back together, you know? Yeah.
Well, that's what's really... Go on, Bob.
Is there any room for symbolic gestures? I mean, that's my go. I'm not good at it. I've never been good at it. I can talk, but I can't symbolically gesticulate, you know, where... you appeal to the heart of the citizens rather than the head. Like, I mean, look how many empty spaces there are around my town, which are now going to, I think, try to develop places like Montague, Fisherman's Bend, Garden City, empty spaces everywhere, whether they're in warehouses or show rooms or just vacant blocks where you could, in fact, say, righto, let's put on a demonstration here and put up tents.
Yep.
Even if they only lasted 48 hours, I mean, just make it a symbolic gesture so that the wretched citizens can see with their eyes, oh, my God, what's this? And say, oh, well, there's 10,000 people who are homeless around the CBD and the suburbs and slightly outer. This is where they're all going to live because they've got nowhere else to go. Oh, my God, we can't have that happening.
I think you might be onto something there. I mean, my predecessor at Homeground, Stephen Nash, you might know, Bob. Do you remember Stephen?
Yes.
Yeah. I remember him being involved in some tent city sort of stuff. And, you know, it's just that sort of bringing it home, bringing the idea home and into people's hearts. I think you're right about that. Yeah.
I don't know what's happened, but I mean, I'm old now and I'm just concerned that maybe there's not as much, close to the surface compassion as we had to work with about, let me think, 25 years ago or 30 years ago. I mean, compassion was there, but it was just beneath the surface. As soon as you told them there were street kids in St Kilda, well, then the compassion seemed to come out, the bubble to the top. But now I find maybe that compassion is like the wreckage of that Malaysian aeroplane that buried so deeply that we can barely hear the ping from the black box.
No, too many people do seem to feel like I don't know that somehow people cause their own problems or deserve their fate. But I'm very optimistic about young people. The young people in their sort of 20s and 30s, but 20s especially, they're a different sort of, they've got some different priorities coming through, and they know all too well what affordable housing problems are.
Yes.
They know it all too well, yeah. So I think once they get a little bit more of a say.
Go on. Well, that's what I was going to say. When you say you're optimistic about them, but you're about to say what you're optimistic about, once they get a bit of a say, what will happen?
Well, I think once they get a bit of a say, I think the priorities will need to change. And what, you know, we're always told, oh, you know, the budget is very tight, you know, there's no money. Well, of course there's money. It's just what you decide to spend it on, basically, isn't it? And I think when this younger generation get more of a say in that sort of thing, then they may well carve it up differently. And that's all we need. This is not a big problem in Australia to solve. It's within our grasp to solve. You know, it's not beyond it.
Oh, God.
Exactly. So what you're actually doing is you're setting an example, and you've involved some sort of blue chip sort of real estate people in here, and you've got Philip Batters from South Yarra or Toorak on board, and we've got a little bit of an interview of him. We might play it later, in which he's just really says that. Well, why did Philip Batters get involved, Heather? Why don't you tell us? You know him better than the short bits of research I've done.
Well, Philip's got a heart. That's pretty much why. So one of our board members knows him and asked him. She said to him, look, you know, we're thinking of this. We need a real estate principal because otherwise that stops the whole project dead because it's too expensive, basically. And he just said, oh, no, sure, I'm kind of worried about people who are homeless. I can do that. He's, reached a stage in his career where, I mean, he's still very, very busy, but he's not the principal of his firm, so he can offer us that. Yeah, so that means what we're trying to do here too is offer a way for people who are concerned, who happen to have a bit more money to pitch in, you see.
Yeah, well, you know, there's very much the ethic of the noblesse oblige, hey, Bob?
Oh, yes, I love a noblesse oblige. But there is a town, a city in the United States of America. I can't remember it, so I can't tell you. But they've decided that even from the point of view of the bottom line, the dollar, it's better for them to say to real estate agents, hey, listen, this city is going to pay the rent on all of those empty properties that you have. And what's more, this is for homeless people, and what's more, we, the state, the city, will also guarantee to maintain those properties so that if some of the comrades who go into the properties for one reason or another are bad, so to speak, tenants, well, then we, the city, will make sure that the owner is not disadvantaged by that. And they said that the bottom line even says that they're going to save lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of money that they would otherwise have to spend on services to homeless people. Now, I would have thought that the bottom line argument, if it's put by bottom line experts, would in fact convert even the city of Melbourne or Sydney or wherever. Heather, surely the bottom line argument's all right. Surely we've got so many properties around the place, empty, residential, that if the city of Melbourne or the state of Victoria said, we will pay the rents and we will maintain the properties, what's the argument against that?
Yep, that'd be a pretty good one. The city of Melbourne are kind of helping. They're worried about how many empty properties they've got, empty residential. So is the city of Yarra, so is the city of Port Phillip. There's a lot of empty residential in all those areas. So they've all been enthusiastic about our idea in the hopes we can kind of tap into some of those owners. I mean, it's not as direct as what you're talking about, which sounds beautiful, which is, you know, saying, okay, all empty residential properties will pay the rent. But, you know, that's part of our aim too, is to try to appeal to those landlords, saying, look, you know, you don't need to leave them empty. We can tenant them, and you'll get them back when you need them in as good a condition as you gave them to us. Mm. That's what we're offering landlords.
Because I know in my last half a century that early days when we Bleeding Hearts went up, knocked on the door of whoever it was around the corner, Buxton or somebody, and said, listen, if you've got a flat that we can have for a couple of people, and all they said, well, they weren't used to that request coming to them, but so they would experiment and say, oh, all right, there is an empty one around the corner. Now, sure as God, when you put the people in there, some ghastly thing happened, you know, like either the carpet was burnt or the... Yeah. And then you had to answer to Mr. whoever it was, the real estate agent, and you knew that you were guilty because you hadn't thought it through. But at the same time, it seemed to be the ideal solution for people who were homeless and who were still short on the scale of being crazy people. They were still sociable. Yeah. They could learn sociability.
Well, that's it. I mean, we see lots of people too who've been quite successful private renters. They know how to do it. But they've just been evicted for whatever reason. The landlord wants the property back for something. They're selling it. And then they just can't get a start in the next place. So, you know, we've got a lot of people who are in that position and on the way down if they can't get something quite quickly. So that's what we're looking at as well, yeah. But, so, you know, we just want to get more strongly into this private rental. Some people, a few of the homeless advocates have, you know, sort of been a bit nervous about it and worried that we're kind of giving up on public housing or, you know, we're sort of... going to concentrate everything on this and some people aren't going to be able to make it in private rental. And I know why they're nervous, but that's not what we're about. We're about making a wide range of options, basically.
We need to have a coalition of the willing.
We do. You know, we do.
All of us, of us agencies, and I mean, I'm only a Mickey Mouse agency, but all of the agencies, you know, who claim to be involved in this solving the problem of homelessness. Who said 2020 the other day? Somebody. Is that the City of Melbourne?
City of Melbourne, yeah, Councillor Foster said that, yeah.
So we're going to have it all solved by 2020. The problem with us propagandists for the underclass is, in fact, that you can't tell people on the street everything will be all right by 2020. It's like telling a cancer sufferer now, oh, my God, they've discovered a cure for your cancer, but it won't be available until 2020.
Yeah, that's it. No.
Isn't it?
Got to be working on it now.
So just in terms of engaging people, Heather, what is it that actually catapulted you into making this sort of move? Like, where did your passion come from? How did you sort of open your heart and get the empathy for homelessness that we all sort of need to have, and the consciousness and the awareness that we all need?
Yeah. Yeah. Look, I used to work in publishing for Penguin Books, actually. And
yes.
Then I was home with my first baby, and back in Richmond when you could afford to live in Richmond. That would have been 1989. And we just had a shocking landlord. She was really shocking to us. And I've always had a bit of a sense of justice, I suppose. So I went off and volunteered at the tenants union, you know, one night a week. And it just really opened my eyes. And I thought, this is really, you know, this is serious stuff, serious work. And one, you know, just one thing led to another. I started getting jobs. And so in among, I had had three babies by the end. And in among having babies, I got, you know, part-time jobs in that sector. And ended up working here, never going back to publishing or anything like that. And, you know, just got that passion for housing. I just think it's something we all need. It's the bedrock for us all. And, you know, once you kind of get into affordable housing, I think Bob might agree, it's a bit hard to get out of it again. You know, you just get upset. And that's what happened to me.
Yeah, well, I remember when I was a tenant, how I just hated it, because you'd be living happily ever after, and then along would come a message, oh, sorry, but the owner wants his house back, or they're selling the house, and yeah, you have to pack up and move. And it is, it's one of the worst things about homelessness, about, you know, being a tenant is the lack of knowing, because then you've got to move in the same suburb, and if you've got children in the local school, it can be very complicated.
Yes.
Yeah, it's very hard. And, you know, your life's just not quite your own, is it? You know, you just never know.
I remember moving in the same street, like literally walking up and down the street with all my furniture twice. Twice. But I moved to three different houses in the one street, and I'd be wandering up and down the footpath with my family, you know, with a trolley with a wardrobe on it or something.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
And that was lucky.
We can do better than that, can't we? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we're lucky to be able to live in the same area still. That's actually lucky, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, that's right. I moved around Kew a lot, and I moved around a town in Queensland, Mooloola, a lot. Both those ones I seem to keep cycling. But, yeah, you have to sort of stay in the same area. Okay.
Gillian, the definition, too, of homelessness, like when I started out, with street people in 73, 74, 75, well, yeah, then homelessness meant that you said, why aren't you home? They'll say, well, they don't want us, or they won't have us, or whatever. But I mean, now I think, Heather, isn't it, there's a wider definition of homelessness, which includes what they used to call, they still calling couch surfing.
Yeah, no, I still call it couch surfing. Yeah.
You've got a roof over your head. It's not your roof.
And you're just there at someone else's kind of discretion, really, aren't you?
Yeah.
Or else you're a woman in the house, you might be helping pay off, but you're getting a hiding all the time. So that's not a home for you either, is it?
No.
You're not safe, you know you can't stay, or it's in a very sort of substandard condition, you know, like your old Dudley Mansion on the flat you were talking about there.
Yeah, or the famous boarding houses around the traps that have, and especially now that there's all kinds of, students from overseas apparently all stuffed into one room and being charged extraordinary rents and so on and so forth, even by compatriots. It's a broader, isn't it? I mean, I know from Melbourne, South Melbourne, Docklands, those areas where there's more vertical buildings going up. I mean, when I say vertical, they're all bloody vertical, but I mean,
higher rise sort of thing.
Yeah.
The human filing cabinets.
Yeah, all of that, where there's, you look at it and say, what a magnificent place, but you don't know what's going on in there. All you know is that the owners may well be taking advantage of students who seem to be everywhere in Melbourne and I presume in Sydney and other capital cities, because they have to study. And we just don't know, do we? See, that's what one of my beefs is now, has always been, but especially now, is that we need to do, what do you call it, a real survey, real research on the exact fabric of homelessness in Melbourne. Exact.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It's hard for even you and your agency, isn't it? Because there seem to be barriers you can't get through to find out exactly what's going on in some...
That's exactly right, yeah. And we're so flat out like you'd be, just with the people who find us, or we find, that, you know, you don't necessarily know about the others, yeah?
Yes, and neither have you got the resources to be able to go any further than you're going presently. I mean, you might be doing a magnificent job for people at a certain level. Once you go beneath that level, wow, you need...
Yeah, we're pretty impassioned about the job we're doing. I think, you know, the people who get to us, and, you know, we do as well as we can by them, but the amount of time they have to wait, you know, it literally kills some people.
It literally kills them.
And we're not that, I mean, we're proud in one way of the work we do, like I hope you are too, Bob, but on the other hand, we're sort of pretty upset about it as well because it's just too, it's just not enough, you know.
Yeah, you'd like to get to the stage where all of those, all of the persons in touch with you or you're in touch with them have got an app whereby they're registered on a list, and as soon as some opportunity becomes available, you go beep.
Yeah.
Their app responds and you say, righto, saddle up because we've got a place for you now.
Yeah. So, you know, when you're saying that you return the houses to the people in the same condition they were given to them, do you actually have an insurance policy rather than a bond? Is that how you'd go about being able to make sure the house – how do you handle that bit?
Well, the landlord we need to take out landlord insurance, which covers certain things.
Yes.
And you see, we've got a couple of ways we're doing the real estate agent deal. One way is just pure, you know, like any other market real estate agent where you need market rent on your property because that's how your finances are. So all that does for HomeGrad is give us the commission instead of another real estate agent taking the commission. And so we'll do that just like another real estate agent will. But there's a second option, which is if you're able to give us your place at a lower rent, mm-hmm. That's great because then that means we can match someone up of the people we're seeing. And we'll give an extra undertaking about returning that property in good condition. We think if people are going to sort of take a reduction and make it available, we don't think it's going to happen very often that we need to do some maintenance, but that's the sort of thing we're going to do.
Yeah,
we already run some properties that way, you know. Yeah. So
how many properties are you running that way, Heather, so far?
No, at the moment we've only got about six like that. We've got some of our own we run. When I last asked yesterday morning, we've had 18 offers this week. So I'm not sure if that's, you know, one property or a couple of properties from owners. I hope it's more than one. We've got another thing we're working on because of this real estate agency, which is a good quality rooming house that we're about to bring into action out in Kew. So, you know, that one we'll just take as from the owner, we'll lease it, and when he needs it, we'll hand it back to him in the same condition he gave it to us. So there's a range of things we can do here, depending on the response that the owner needs, and we can tailor it up for him.
It's a fantastic thing to do. Look where Freeman lives, Bob. That there's a house next door to
beautiful house.
Yeah, but in the house next door, there's this massive, massive property, and it's completely empty. Like and you could fit 20 families in it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're all over the place. They're all over the place. But don't forget now, like around the corner from me is a property that used to be an old picture theatre, and it was chosen by Channel 9, The Block, to be developed. Right. Now, that's just around the corner from here. We had a look at it the other day, part of the publicity, and
I think they
expect four apartments to sell for up to $2 million each.
Mm-hmm.
And they expect that the buyers probably may well come from Asia.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got that market, haven't you? You've got the market where you're saying to people, the Asians have got the money to spend now, apparently, for whatever economic reason. And that's just another indicator. I don't say keep the boats out. The Asians are coming to buy all the real estate. But the fact of the matter is you have to have the appetite for a preemptive strike, haven't you?
Well, that's exactly it.
I was going to say, too, and you've got to make it so that developers think it's going to be worth their while making affordable properties to let well, you know, instead of or to sell.
So how do you do that, Heather?
I don't know. I haven't got the answer to that one, I have to confess. But, you know, to have those sort of returns that developers think are okay instead of that sort of very quick buck type of thing that you're describing there, I suppose people have just got to try and work out what their priorities are a bit sometimes. Mm. If it's pure money, you might not win that argument. But if it's,
I don't know whether it would be. Would it be naked socialism if you in fact said, look, for every block that's developed at that level, the developers will have to develop, contribute to another block somewhere else in a less salubrious area, and where they could do pop-up containers or something for people who are less, you know what I mean? In other words,
you kind of have a little bit of a percent of each development directed that way. I think that's a good way to go.
The Robin Hood project, where you say, yes, by all means, let's help the rich. But we're helping the rich so that we can help the poor.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, we go the other way and we get very, leftish and say, no, the rich, they're the problem. So don't do anything. No, I think we got to do it. Haven't we got to do it the Aussie way, which is a bit each way, a hybrid?
Yeah, and a bit pragmatic as well. Yeah,
yes.
I agree.
Yes.
Mm. Well, go on. I don't need to speak. You just keep speaking. It doesn't have to go where I think it's meant to go. It can go anywhere.
I'm leaving in a minute because I've got two weddings.
Oh.
Two weddings. Got to put on some lipstick or do something. I don't know what I'm going to do.
Don't forget your frock.
No, I don't want to frighten the people. One of them's in the open too, so I hope it doesn't rain at the Fitzroy Gardens, I think. The boy and the dolphin. Nice. Is it the boy and the dolphin fountain or something?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that'll be nice. That'll be nice.
I'm about to go to the market in Castle Lane, which is a pretty nice thing to do. So,
oh, that's a nice
market.
Yeah, well, I was thinking your family. Yeah, it's a beautiful little market. I bought my first Araucana chook at the Teuton market.
It's a good place to buy it, yes.
Yeah, they lay the blue eggs, the blue-green eggs.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, they're fantastic, aren't they? I just love them. Yeah.
Heather, the Castlemaine, for example, I'm a bit of a, you know what I mean? When I go to Sunbury last Tuesday, and I think we were in Echuca a weekend before doing something nice in the public speaking and all that. But I keep saying to those towns, and I would suggest Castlemaine, for example, everybody would presume that there's no homelessness in those beautiful towns. But there must be, mustn't there? There must be an
I know there is. I worked in Bendigo for 8 years, but the network of all the agencies around that Loddonelly up along the river and Castlemaine, Kyneton, out to Oye and all those ones.
Dale?
Yeah. There is. And and young people take an inordinate amount of the strain here.
Bendigo was we were working with Luke Owens, I think it was. Luke Owens, who was a teacher in Bendigo, and he got shocked and horrified when one of the kids in his primary school class, I think, was coming to school every day looking progressively more haggard and ragged until then he said, "What's wrong with you, darling?" And she said, "Oh, well, you know, we had to leave the house and we're sleeping in the car." And he was shocked and horrified to the extent that he launched, I think, a campaign to help homeless young people around Bendigo. And it went off like a firecracker with the Bank of Bendigo throwing its weight behind it.
This is the fellow who got the Haven Maya Foundation thing going,
isn't
it?
That's
being built at the moment. That's fantastic. Yeah,
that combination. You need a bit of local, regional, you need a bit of state and federal, all in together. That's my point. And on my lovely church, the Roman Catholic Church, for God's sake, which has got so much real estate through owning schools, surely I've said to publicly even, there must be a little bit of every real estate that the Catholic Church has got, or any other church for that matter, where they could say, righto, you can have that down there to do a pop-up homeless component.
Yeah.
They don't have to give it away. I'm saying they can be hard-nosed and say you can have it for 100 years.
Yeah, that's right. Then they keep the land.
And they can show off a bit and say, here you are, we're doing what the founder of the firms had to do.
Yeah, that's right.
Huh? So they're doing the Royal Commissions all over the place for, excuse me, how much money have you lot got in the bank so that we can, make sure that victims of sexual abuse are being compensated. That's the downside. The upside would be look how many parishes are in fact the home for local homeless people. That's the best way of doing penance I can think of.
Yep.
Well, psychologists, you know, always say that being losing your home is second in grief next to death. So it's really hard for people when they're in a state of homelessness, when they're in a state of this sort of, homelessness, you know, like that displacement, being displaced.
But see, we know people born into homelessness. See, my half of a century means that I know people who were, I know one bloke who was, I think, evicted with his parents when he, this bloke, was a baby in the pusher, and they were all kicked out of a property. Now, he's been homeless for the term of his natural life. He's now 56 years of age or something. And there's so many of those people who I know have never had a place to call home.
I agree with you, Bob. We meet a lot of people in that particular predicament. It's hard to believe, isn't it? They've never had an opportunity then.
Mm. Yeah, and what to do, because home might even frighten the tripe out of them if they realise what a home is. Maybe they need, I don't know what the alternative to home is. It's a bit like talking about marriage, gay marriage and hetero marriage. Which is the marriage, you know? Like home, what is home? Can it be a place that's just shared with other people who love you, you know? It mightn't even be your own personal, because it might frighten the tribe out of you if you ended up in a personal residence.
Well, it might frighten the tribe out of you, but sorry, go on, Heather.
Oh, I was going to say, you know, loneliness can be a problem for people after they find a better place, you know. Yeah.
Post-trauma stress disorder they would suffer. My God, I've seen a little doco here made by a local bloke who was trying to get the message across through the telly, and his little doco was about seeing local people go in, opening the door of a flat, going in.
Is that Mick Cummins?
Yes, thank you.
I know Mick. We've gave him a little bit of money, trying to get that kicked along.
That was very, very, very impressive, because you had comments coming out of the mouth of the people just opening the door and say, oh, my God, we've got a window. Well, the other one was, oh, my God, we've got our own toilet and bathroom, which they'd never had. So they say, well, now at least the germs are our own.
Yeah, it's pretty basic, isn't it?
Basic. No, he needs to get that thing on the telly, the same as you'd have with the devil in the deep blue sea telling the predicament of asylum seekers. I mean, these homeless people, God love them, are the asylum seekers of our own cities.
Yeah, that's right. Very under the radar, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, we better all go to work, Gillian, hadn't we?
I think we had.
I think I better let you all go. Look, in a way, it's like a form of social bullying, isn't it? And so me being interested in bullying and the bystander effect, it means that all the people who are watching shouldn't just be bystanders and not participate, but we need to become upstanders and stand up and be more involved, like Bob and Heather are involved, and go and talk, keep the conversation alive, which is always part of my solution, and talk with people more about the realities of homelessness. And then, now you've brought up a new one, the realities of getting a home and the isolation. Like, even when you fix one problem, you have another problem, but there can be no problem greater than being exposed to the elements and the dangers of homelessness.
That's right. Now, that problem of paying your job to a house is a much smaller one.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a problem worth having. Yeah.
And so if you were to encourage any real estate agents, Heather, what would you say to them?
Well, we had a lot of real estate agents work alongside us over the years, and, you know, we really appreciate that. But I suppose one thing that we could say is, you know, just ask your landlords just who they're willing to take in their property, because it might be surprising that, you know, people don't necessarily just want the highest income earner with the longest rental history. You know, they might be interested in a single mother who's trying to stay in the area so her kids can stay in school, for example. They might like their property used that way. So that might be a question that agents might want to start asking. That'd be a good thing.
Yeah, just to ask your clients if they're interested in doing something benevolent at the same time as looking after their own income, just for slightly adjusted.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm.
Yeah, that's a great idea. And what about you, Bob?
Now, all I can do is I had one of Australia's leading architects in here the other day, who I'd known earlier, and I was saying to him, listen, what about if I can get a vacant block can you design pop-ups so that we can have at least a symbolic estate so that the public can kind of have their attention drawn to the predicament, even if it's only symbolic. But that's the only kind of thing I can do because I'm too old to do otherwise, you know.
Well, this is my point, because people go with the power. This is the problem. We have this innate drive to go with the power rather than with the powerless. So if we see more power in looking after one another, I think that's a really important thing we have to do. And so your gesture isn't just a symbolic gesture. It's a powerful gesture.
Yeah, and if people in high places could in fact occasionally get on Australian Story and say, well, look, I spent the first, like Kevin Rudd used to say, with his mother, spent time in the back of a motor car. See, so the people get the real impression is that it can happen to anybody.
Yeah.
It's not, you're not born into it. There's not a kind of a homeless gene, which is verging on the hopeless gene or helpless gene, that it can happen to any one of us. And therefore, there, but for the grace of God, go I. And also, therefore, we should all be in this together. It's like that thing by, what's his name, Russell
Crowe. Ben Lee.
No, Russell Crowe and Noah's Ark, the film that's out now.
Yep.
Yeah.
We know it's a myth, but the story there is shelter.
Mm.
Shelter. Whatever about the biblical things, I mean, it's mythology, but the shelter, we need more shelter. We need an ark. We need a safe place for people, and that doesn't just necessarily mean chuck them all into a boarding house, because and even out in the open, I mean, we celebrated here in Melbourne, I think, the other weekend, Heather, didn't we, the death of that man nicknamed Mouse.
Wayne,
See, who slept under the bridge, and he was unfortunately murdered under the bridge by somebody else who was sleeping under the bridge.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of people slept out because they didn't want to live in dangerous or daunting circumstances from hostile fellow tenants in a boarding house, but there he slept out, and out was less safe than in. Anyway, God bless the lot of us.
All right, well, God bless the lot of you. Father Bob McGuire, you've got to and help some people get married and hope their children don't grow up to become homeless.
To go to the market.
Yes.
Yeah, we didn't go where, I beg your pardon?
And go get some food in the house,
yes.
Go and get some food in the house, and we're so lucky to be able to do that. Both of you, thank you so much for coming, and I'll contact you.
Thank you to Stephen Roberts for being the sound engineer.
Well, thank you, Father Bob. And
thank
Heather.
The working class.
Good on you, everybody. Thanks for taking interest in this issue.
No, thanks, Heather. I'll be in touch later, both of you.
Okay. See you now. Bye.
See you guys.
Now we press that red button, don't we?
Yeah, have a look, see what it does to you, Bob. Stephen, are you cueing the music? Let's see if you go to paradise or hell.
They're
when
off
you
now,
press
yes.
that button, Bob.
He's off.
Okay.
I pressed it for him.
Oh, did you?
Yes, I did. All right. Okay. I'll go to the song.
Okay, then. This is not always like this for everyone. Okay, everyone. So thank you very much for coming, Father Bob McGuire and Dr. Heather Holst, who has a PhD in homelessness. Well, the thing that I really got out of that, Stephen, was the fact that so many people are actually still helping people. We have to remember that, don't we?
Yes, they do. Yes, we are. We're everyone has a little part. We're all trying to play.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of people around the town that I live in that keep their rents lower for other people, and I really admire that. So, you know, if we can all just look after each other, then that's a wonderful thing. You've got a show coming up now, Stephen. What's it about?
Yes, I do. Well, I have Greg Ford coming on again.
Oh, yeah.
The military whistleblower.
Oh, your military whistleblower.
I know it. He has
Is he homeless? Does he have a home? Does the military give him good money?
The military did give him good money until they took a bunch of it.
And then they took a bunch of it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just, you know, if only we just keep staying in our hearts and looking after one another and not living in a mansion with a big empty mansion next door owned by Asians, which is exactly the situation.
Yes, it is. But, you know, it always makes people feel good when they give. And I wouldn't say all, but a lot of these rich people, you hear about them having so many psychological problems, and it's because they take, and they don't give.
Absolutely. It's an implosion rather than an explosion. And
yeah.
An implosion is
well,
can turn into a lot of self-hatred.
Yeah.
Stephen,
it's probably a good note to end on there. Yeah. Go ahead.
Thank you, Stephen Roberts.
Oh, you're welcome.
People's Internet Radio. And good night, everyone.